Five, four, three, two, one. Bam!
Who's the best show here?
Back show!
Who's the best show here?
Back show!
Yeah, that's the best one yet.
Pizza. The pizza.
I am short.
Big O! Showtime!
When you were making egg poo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link it bad. With the strong link, go back to DLFGS.org. And IC Challenge, Linux.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, go to the castle, just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 940 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going?
We have Joel.
From the Silicon Heartland of Ohio.
And we have Joe.
Hello?
Yes.
And it's the last episode of January. 2022. You believe
it? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, we're almost into February already. Before we get into some technical stuff, I was supposed to have a colonoscopy today. And I couldn't do it because my oldest daughter came down with COVID on Saturday. And she's been staying here. And then my youngest came down with it on Sunday. And surprisingly, like my wife thought my wife has been sick too. But she took, in grand total over the past week and a half, because she was feeling sick the week before, grand total 3 COVID tests. Every single one of them came back negative. My youngest daughter... My oldest daughter's COVID test came back right away.
Well, it might be that new stealth variant.
Yeah, my youngest daughter, it was a very faint line. So both my wife and my youngest daughter went for a PCR test on Monday. My wife got the test results back today, negative. We're still waiting on my daughter's, but she had fever and everything today too. So we can't imagine that it won't be positive. I took one on Monday morning and it came back negative, but I had to call them up and they had to reschedule my colonoscopy. So I didn't get a camera in my butt today, Joel.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't get to pass the big old fart after this test.
We all got the coof. Right before Christmas.
Did you?
It was like a cold. My wife got it the worst out of all of us.
Right.
She was like very, like, her energy was like sapped and she was coughing, you know? But the rest of us, no big deal.
My wife had a cold. We never got her tested or anything because she was, it was not like typical COVID symptoms. You know, it was like snotting and goop in her throat, you know, just, and she was feeling not tireder than normal. Okay, she didn't just lay around all day, so we didn't really bother going to get tests, and she's fine.
We all got tested, we were all positive.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, it is what it is. Like I said, it's like a cold now.
Yeah,
as long as you don't have like, you know, like a comorbidity, you'll probably be okay.
No,
I do. That's why I got the vaccinations.
one of the things that I heard is that it hit, the Omicron in particular hits women harder.
It does, yeah.
And because I had like sore throat a little bit, and I was like, man, is it? Am I just thinking? Is it?
Nah.
And my daughters, man, the ones who got it. They knocked him out. I've been knocking my wife around too. But
see, it would be hard for me to figure out.
Gives you the shits.
Didn't get that.
Nah, it would be hard for me to figure out if I actually got it just based on my throat, because every once in a while I'll get a sore throat anyway. Because
deep throat.
Well, no, I.
It's
really,
those bill dogs. You're not supposed to swallow them whole.
Hell, that was back in October. No, I really should get better at making sure that my humidifier feature of my CPAP has got water in it, but I rarely do. I definitely don't in the summer. In summer, it's pretty humid anyway, so the air's humid enough. But in the winter, I really should start to make sure that I put the distilled water in it every night.
Let me guess, you're wearing a full face, and you still haven't taught yourself how to breathe through your nose at night.
Well, yeah, I can't breathe through my nose. And, you know, it depends. Most nights I can, you know, but I always end up opening my mouth at some point in the night. So, you know, and I'll wake up with like real dry mouth and stuff. So, but usually, you know, just a few seconds after taking the mouth, you know, just kind of do a, you know, kind of like act like I'm chewing on something and the saliva goes and I'm fine. But
yeah, I can tell the nights.
I
can tell the nights where I'm like seriously congested because, you know, I'll wake up in the morning and my tongue will be like a piece of beef jerky. It's so dry.
Yep, I'll get that. Well, and a lot of times, like what I usually have, like every morning, I'll have a little bit of congestion anyway. But then if I just blow the snot box out or sneeze. And we usually, if I feel a sneeze come on at that point, I try and force it through my nose and blow snot all over my face. But it's morning. Well, I haven't even had a shower, you know, but I don't care.
Live on nasal spraying. You'll be able to breathe through your nose at night.
Oh, I do Flonase through every day of the year, pretty much. Sometimes you're only really supposed to do it like once or twice a day. Once a day, I think. I end up usually doing it once in the morning,
If you do it too much, then your body gets used to it, your nasal passage gets used to it, and you'll end up having to do it like every hour. So your best bet is to go and see an allergist, an allergy specialist, and get some prednisone for, you know, a week or two. Get unhooked from the stuff and then go back to using it just before you go to bed.
Right.
That and some ibuprofen.
Actually, maybe I should just use it maybe I should just use it right before bed anyway.
Yeah,
that's the main reason I do it. I've actually successfully gone through 1 year without having an ear infection. Or at least not one that was bad enough that I had to go get some antibiotics.
Just get some tubes put in your ears.
Well, my son has that, but no, I
become a cyborg, you'll be fine.
Yeah, right. But that's really the only thing I get. Like, I'll get a little sore throat sometimes because of the CPAP, because I didn't put the humidifier in, it's in, but I just didn't put the water in it. But
right.
You know, so it's like,
I'm lazy
dumbass.
Too, and I don't put water in mine.
Yep. And then I was trying to figure out too. Now, see, I also have a SoClean now for mine because I got it for like $25. It's normally like $200 or $300, and Walgreens locally was starting to clear them out at $25 a pop. So of course I bought one. The only thing I have to buy, probably in the next couple weeks, I need to look at ordering a. It has a filter inside of it, and essentially what it does is you got a replacement for the top of the humidification chamber that has a hose that comes from it and goes into the back of the machine, and then you take the mask and you put it in this in top of this thing. And close the lid. You want to make sure that the hose from the mask is still connected to the machine. And you close the lid, and it pushes down a switch where the hose goes in. And then it has a timer built into it. But every once in a while, we'll have a power outage or something. So sometimes I just hit the button on it in the morning right after I do it. And essentially, what it does is it disinfects the whole system using ozone. So, and I've gotten a lot, ever since I switched to that, I've gotten a lot less of the nasties from just not, I've gonna tell you now. You're supposed to clean your mask and your tubing every day.
It depends on how much water you run through it.
Right,
the VA
that too,
always told me that if you have it set at like a 6 or a 7, then yeah, you should probably clean it every day. But if you have it lower than that, about once a week is okay. And then if you don't use it at all, it should be like once every 10 days or something.
Right. Well, the soap clean kind of gets me out of having to do that because it does it for me. It disinfects the mask. It disinfects the whole system, essentially. So, and it's not that big a deal. It takes a little space. The only thing I do is I kept the normal top because I don't like to take it with me when I travel. You know, because it's just another thing I have to take with me. So, at that point, I'll swap everything back because you have to actually the replacement top the SoClean comes with. There's like a seal in my humidification chamber on the inside, so you have to pop the seal out of the normal lid and pop it into this one, and it fits perfectly. So, and you got to do that because if you don't, then the system won't work, and neither will your CPAP. So, but generally though, I like it. Works really well. It does give you a little bit of that ozone scent when you first put the mask on at night. But it's not that bad. It goes away pretty quickly. So, but I fully recommend. They have the new version of it, the SoClean 3. I would consider buying that for full price when this one's done and doesn't work anymore. So, because I think it's a good idea to clean your system every day. It's just not a bad idea to do that.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, sickness wise, I've been pretty good this winter so far. Try to stay in it as much as possible. That's even with going to the gym. I've been to the gym like 2 or 3 times. Right now, I'm just trying to sort out like what's the best schedule for me. Like, I'll probably go tomorrow night. I went Monday after bowling.
Once every 6 months for 30 minutes.
Nah,
that's the best schedule for you.
No, I'm trying to get in a habit of doing it again, since not doing it for so long is difficult, especially with my schedule changes and stuff. But and the occasional insomnia. Ugh.
Occasional. Lucky bastard.
Oh, I wouldn't. Actually, it's been more occasional lately than not. But Trazodone is my friend now.
No, Tylenol PM and melatonin.
Melatonin never did shit for me.
Well, melatonin doesn't do much for me, but it's the two of them together that actually, you know.
Yeah, the Tylenol PM would.
It's like the melatonin helps get me to sleep, and the Tylenol 3 helps keep me asleep.
Yeah. For me, it's always I do have some Sonata left, but I've kind of stopped taking it because it didn't really do much for me anymore. That's a short-acting one, so you can kind of take it in the middle of the night if you have to. Because it only really lasts for about 30 minutes or so. And that usually would cover me. Lately, it hasn't been. Sleep, you know, if you don't have sleep issues and you're an IT person, I don't know you.
No, you do. I don't have sleep issues.
Well, you're
lucky. The only thing I take to go to sleep is my ass to bed. That's it.
You're lucky.
I know, and I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I tried to go for a bike ride yesterday. It did not go in my favor.
Was it too cold, or
the hell is wrong with my headset? All your fault, Joel.
What happened to your bike?
Well, no. The problem was, Texas isn't supposed to be this damn cold.
I was going to say, was it too cold?
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I bundled up pretty good before I went out for my bike ride. The only thing is I was wearing cloth gloves, fingerless gloves, and then leather gloves over top of those. And then my fingers weren't covered up. And the sweatshirt I was wearing wasn't stopping the wind. And so I was fine for like the first half of the first mile. Come around the backside, and I'm coming back the other way, and I'm just freezing my butt off. So, yeah, 1 mile was all I got yesterday. That sucked.
Yeah. That's like, it's like the first time I went back, I tried the normal, there's the elliptical, which I hate, you know, the one with the arms and the legs, and then they got another one, I'm trying to remember what they call it, but basically it's just the legs. That was really hurt me that the first time I tried it. So now I'm just doing the treadmill with no incline yet, just trying to get used to it. You know, the first time I did like a half an hour, the fastest I went was about 2.5. So it was a walk, essentially.
Right before the show, I did 30 minutes on the elliptical. Right.
See, I'm not coordinated enough to do the elliptical. Two of my hands and my feet at the same time.
That's the elliptical because that's easier to explain than the gazelle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This other thing is similar to the gazelle, but it's a lot beefier. The gazelle's cheap shit.
Yeah, you can get them for like $25, but you know what?
Right.
You can get them for like $25.
Yeah, that's right. But actually, if I got one, I'd have enough room downstairs that I can put one up downstairs somewhere, like a treadmill or something like that. But I would probably pay someone to deliver the bastard because I'm not going to buy a cheap one.
My dad called me today and told me that my grandma bought a $1,400 exercise bike.
Peloton.
If it was a Peloton, and he's like, I don't know. And it's like, well, did it have a screen in the front of it? And he's like, no, not that I saw, but it was right in front of her TV. So I don't know if it's a Peloton-capable one, or if she just bought a $1,400 exercise bike because she thought it'd be fun.
Well, see, I could see a normal exercise bike costing that much, like the ones they use at Planet Fitness. I don't know which one of your machines is doing that, Dan, but I definitely think it's you. Yeah, I just heard a bump, bump, and then I heard the spark, spark, so I think it's your cable again. Anyway.
All right, this is getting to be a problem. I can't walk more than 10 feet away from this thing. That's annoying. Why have a wireless if I can't go lift weights?
Oh. So we started dropping out on you and your wireless?
Well, no, I'm getting the double beep.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The double beep that I disconnected. So I'm going to move the receiver.
There you go. The thing I don't want to do is get wrapped into stuff that requires me to pay a monthly fee for, like the Peloton. You know, it's like, you know,
I'd be okay with paying, you know, a $6-$8 a month fee for something like Peloton because, you know, it gives you the chance to interact with other people or take classes.
$6-$8, yes, but
if it were $6 or $8.
Right.
I don't know how much it actually is. How much is it actually?
I don't know. I'd have to research that.
My problem with it is the initial cost, the barrier to entry there, the $2,000 freaking bike.
See, Peloton membership. $39 a month. I pay less to my gym. I'm good.
I'll watch a YouTube video that's a class or something.
I actually found, especially since they got all different treadmills at the Grove City one, since the brand new Planet Fitness. If I take like my iPad, I loaded up. What did I load up on it? a TV show or something. I forget what it is. But I'll start the treadmill, get my earbuds in, and then put my iPad up on the screen over the thing that normally shows you like your time and stuff.
Right.
And if I just watch the show and just walk, all of a sudden I'm through a half hour show and I've done a half an hour. It's like, that works for me. Take my mind off of it.
Distract yourself.
Yes.
Especially if you're doing something slower, steady state like that. Now, I found with like faster things, if I really want to push it on the bike or something while on the stationary bike, then it's better for me to do some fast-paced music.
Right.
Because I'll kind of naturally just keep pace with the music. So.
I think, what was it? Oh, I know. I probably was watching some Scrubs on Hulu again. Every once in a while, I'll start rewatching that series because it's funny. And it shows that how dated the technology was back in that time period, you know, because they're not pulling out smartphones and stuff. They're pulling out like phones that, and they were like
the Razor,
yes, and flipping out that their phone was able to play music for their ringtone. And I'm like, nobody gives a shit about that anymore.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cause now it's just like find an MP3 and, oh, there's my ringtone.
Yeah.
But, those were the days.
What's the big news?
It used to be difficult to set up things to be your ringtone.
Right. But, actually, let's cover a little bit of...
What's the big news? The big news, huh?
Big news
crypto
here.
Crash?
Well, there's a couple things this week. One
you guys
want to
talk crypto crashing?
Well, yeah, we can, but... I'm going to bring up my Ohio news first, though, because Intel is putting $20 billion into building a chip factory in New Albany, Ohio, which is a suburb of the Columbus area.
You going to get a job there?
No, I'm not.
I asked him that last week.
Did we talk about that last week? We might have, yeah. So they're calling. Some of the politicians are starting to call Ohio the Silicon Heartland because it's the Midwest chip making plant. But it's not supposed to come online until 2025. So that's one news. And the other is another Linux vulnerability this week.
Yeah, this is a big one, huh?
Yep. Thank you, Systemd. Vulnerability.
Yeah, I saw a headline on. Like all major distros,
yeah,
or something to that effect. But I didn't read the article, so tell me about it.
So there is a root exploit, or in what is it? Policy Manager?
Polkit,
which is part of Systemd, which if apparently it's like extremely easy to exploit, it's trivial.
Yep.
And that if you have access to the Linux system, you can fire off this exploit, which will give you root access.
Yep. The Pwnkit is the I think the Pwnkit, Pwnkit, is the name of the exploit. And it was first the particular item was introduced and been here. The bug's been in Linux since 2009. So most of them Red Hat has a workaround already. Fortunately, at least from my side, I probably will not be involved in it except for validating systems after the fact, because it's the OS is the responsibility of our platform team, so they're gonna be applying the workarounds. We have mostly Red Hat. We still have some CentOS. I'm trying to remember what we're migrating to instead of CentOS. I can't remember, but yes. So it's. I don't think it's as bad as Log4j, but it is bad.
So apparently the researcher, it was reported by Qualys, And the researcher, Bharat Jogi, wrote that the most likely attack scenario is from an internal threat where a malicious user can escalate from no privileges whatsoever to full root privileges. From an external threat perspective, an attacker has been able to gain a foothold on the system via another vulnerability or password breach. That attacker can escalate to full root privileges through this vulnerability. So, so far, it hasn't been shown that it can run remotely without authentication. So if a person can access your system, log into it in some way, they can escalate with this PwnKit vulnerability. Is there a distro that hasn't updated to fix this problem yet? Probably.
Red Hat has workarounds that you can apply. Changes to PwnKit. It's not an actual patch. But the other good thing too, at least with my company, is most of the Linux clients that we have, we do not let them have shell prompt access, like plain old SUSE registration clerk doesn't have command line access. We use the no login parameter in their profiles, in their Petsford file, so they can't log in directly to the prompt anyway. They can still log in the system using our application, but they can't log into the prompt. So, and for us, that will be, the only way that I would see it coming through is if they were able to get access via another vulnerability or access to one of our logins. But we are, of course, going to patch it or, to mitigate it. So, but, and it was also confirmed on ARM64 as well, so it's everywhere, every Linux platform.
Now, it's interesting. Ubuntu has... okay, I was going to say, I was just looking on Ubuntu's notice page, and they have patches, updates for it, and I was like, well, this is 16.04 and 14.04, but no, they also have 21.10, 20.04, and 18.04 updates for all of those. So, yeah, and Debian has them, Red Hat, Arch Linux, so there might be some smaller distributions that might not have patched yet, but... I'm impressed that this comes out and less than 24 hours later, they're updated. Even though, I get it. It's been something that's been out there for 12 years now or something.
Yep.
12 years. And hey, these things happen, Now Joe has to get his ass together and update all the systems at work, right?
No, that'll be the Unix team.
But it looks like, too, I actually just fired up my Windows subsystem for Linux, Ubuntu install, did an apt update, and I'm doing a apt upgrade right now. And it is got the patches for PwnKit, so by the looks of it. So I think that's going to be good, too. And that's Focal is the... version of Ubuntu that's on Windows subsystem for Linux. So, and that's on my Windows 11 machine where that is. So it's even that stuff's of course it's getting patched because it's straight up Ubuntu repos that it uses. So,
now, let's see. I don't see SUSE's security notices listing anything.
Yeah, I guess it would have to depend on if your distro is using systemd or not. Most of them are. But if you're still using
Oh, there we go. Recommended update for systemd came out on the 21st.
Oh, there you go. The distro that I just started playing with this week probably... isn't vulnerable, and the reason is it uses OpenRC for the init. This doesn't use systemd, and that's a Dell Adelie, or I'm trying to figure how you say it.
You know what? I stand corrected. This is a different security update, not for Polkit. What is going on? Sousa, man. I don't know. They did release a security update for Clam AV today, and a recommended update for CloudNet config on the 24th and Java on the 24th. Right. A lot of 24s. I'm surprised I don't see anything. Sousa. What happened? What happened?
So, that's a good question. But distros like the one I just am playing with this week is Adelie Linux. It's named after the Adelie Penguin. It is available on x64, but it's also available on PPC32 as well as PPC64, which means I can run it on my old PowerBook G4. I was able to get it installed pretty easily. I did have to, because it's with this release candidate, I think it's RC2, I think. You had to set up the partitions by hand because the Horizon UI program that that it uses for its installer doesn't seem to understand the Mac way of doing disk partitions and stuff like that. So you had to set up your partitions with a Mac FAT, I think. Yeah. So you had to manually set up the partitions before, manually format them with MKFS. Once you did that, because you had the boot partition has to be an HFS partition and can't do it off of AXT4. Once you do that, the install usually goes pretty well. I did have to do some mod probe commands to get the Ethernet to work. I still haven't been able to get the Wi-Fi to work on it yet. Still playing around with that. I was able to load Firefox, but it's like still one of the problems with a lot of the Linux distros out there. You know, first off, the Ubuntu version that will run it on it is the 2016 version, so it's not gonna be anything modern, as in anything within the last 5 years. And the Firefox level, I think it's at the same level there as 68, I think. So, and then if you load OS X on it, it's got the same problem, is you can't get a modern browser to work on it. That's if YouTube and other modern websites would actually work on it, which I don't think it does. Other than that, it's running KDE Plasma. I chose the KDE Plasma version. They have a LXDE version as well as a Mate version of the install disk. But it seems to work pretty well. KDE works well. I did load Mumble on it. I wasn't going to play around and try and get it to work tonight, though, because I'd have to be tethered to an Ethernet cable, because that's the only network I can get working on it. But and I don't know that I can get the Wi-Fi working on it either, because some of the standard packages that do seem to work on some of the Linux distros, like a B43 is a FW Cutter, I think, for getting the binary blobs for the Broadcom chips, because it has a Broadcom chip. That stuff just doesn't seem to work, and it uses apt for its package repo. So apk add software name and installs the software. So and the other thing too is because the default image that you can pick in the installer includes Thunderbird, and they don't have Thunderbird ported yet to PPC32. That version will not fail, so you have to start with like a pretty bare bones installation. And the instructions I found were in a YouTube video, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy, but the one thing he forgot to do to tell you, because basically we'll boot to command prompt first, then you can install KDE Plasma Desktop. But before he has you set it up so that it boots right into KDE and that's using SDDM, he forgot to have you put a terminal app in there, like console or something. So he had to figure out the virtual console keys to fix that so that you can actually load a terminal. Which I tried the console in Q shell, which is a Qt based terminal. The fonts are funky in it, and there's some terminal stuff that's not set up. But this Linux is a very young Linux distro. The forums hardly have anything in them, and the documentation is also in the same place too. So trying to find documentation on how to do things on it, which are specific to its distro, and of course it's not using the same kind of package names either. So that's kind of making some of the things difficult. That, and it's not like everybody has PPC hardware to test it on anymore. So, but it's the first time I was able to get the latest kernel running on my G4. So that's something. They did a good job with that.
How is the hardware support on that?
It seems to be good. The only thing that doesn't really work is the Wi-Fi right now. So on Intel, I bet you it would probably be fine.
Do you know what the Wi-Fi, the chipset is?
It's Broadcom.
Broadcom. And it doesn't work? Or they just didn't get the firmware over onto the architecture?
I think that's might be what it is. It's finding the compatible firmware that'll work with the latest kernel for PPC. That's what I'm thinking it might be. But maybe they're still working. Well, it's a release candidate, so it's not, you know, ready for prime time, I guess I should say. Plus, it is, you know, PPC. You know, it's a little bit old technology, so. But, and you got to remember, my PowerBook G4, it's 20 years old, man. So, yeah, I've had that for a long, well, this isn't the same one I had because the hard drive died in my old one, but I was doing video editing on this back in 2003-ish, so it's about, you know, it's 20 years old this year, so. But, and more security news, too. If you have an iDevice, you probably want to load 15.03, or 15.3. That was just released today.
Why would you want that?
Latest security updates. They made some minor changes to things too, but nothing I can really detect on my work iPhone. I'd loaded it on there already. Haven't loaded it on my main tablet or my main iPad downstairs. It's because I haven't watched anything on it. Yeah, I was gonna I'll load it up probably before after I get off the show and when I start watching some stuff to wind down. I also dug out my not that it's actually new. I have the Fire 7 Amazon tablet. Man, I forgot how bad that thing was. Had to load a couple OS updates, but then I did some more research on Fire OS. They haven't had an update since 2019, and it's based on Android 7. So how many releases behind is that?
Android 7, holy crap. That's at least five releases, isn't it?
Yeah, yep. That's what FireOS is based on.
I think we're on 12 now.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. In other weird firmware issue, firmware news, Microsoft finally released Android 11 for the Surface Duos. The original one.
Not the RTs.
Not the Surface Duo 2. Oh, the RT. What are you talking about? The Surface RTs? Oh, hell, those are long out of date now.
Those were garbage the day they came out.
They pretty much were. Although I had some friends, like I had my old boss at Columbus State. She had one. She liked it.
As long as she didn't like actually running applications.
Yeah. No, the Microsoft has an Android phone now, the Duo, and the Duo 2, which is the second version of it. And your next note is going to be the S22 Ultra.
Maybe.
If you get a note again.
Well, if I get a phone, it'll be the note, but it might be another, you know, year or two before I get another phone.
Right. Because I think you got yours after I got mine, I think, right?
About the same time. We both got the Note 10 Plus.
I still owe about $300 on mine.
I'm all paid off on mine.
Good for you.
Means I probably got mine before you got yours.
Probably. Now here's the interesting thing. My dad bought a Pixel 6 Pro. So far, he says he likes it. So
that's cool.
I guess that's the first of Android phones. I think it's the first non-Samsung he's had. I think. He had like the 7, and I think the S7 was his first one. And he had an S20 or an S20. No, it had to be an S20, or maybe prior to that. Yeah, because he didn't have the one with the funky looking camera section with three cameras. But I think he had like an S7 active at one point. I forget which one he had, but now he's finally experiencing straight up Android as it should be. Yeah, I'm really thinking about, I don't know, I'm thinking about between those two. You know, there's a lot of people complaining about bugs on the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro, but then for every person I see whinging about bugs on it, I see lots of people say, well, I don't have a problem with mine. That's like the group of people I do a podcast with for iTech Gear. Larry McJunkin, he found a bug in Windows 11 where if you click the like little quick search icon on the taskbar, it would put up a blank window there. You can see like the frame of the window, but nothing inside of it, and you can see through to the window behind it. Kind of annoying, but I've never had that. The only thing I can figure out is it might be something with a particular Intel graphics card that he has in his laptop, because I don't have it, and the main 11 system I have is got an NVIDIA card in it, so, and I haven't had it, so. But that's just weird, strange issues that you see on all sorts of stuff, and that brings up the question here is, does the amount of money that you spend on something mean that you look at bugs in that product differently? In my case, yeah,
what do you mean?
Okay, well, say, look,
if
say
I
you
spend $50 on a blue phone,
right?
Or And it comes and it has bugs. Okay, yeah, I kind of expected that. I paid $50 for a phone. What was I thinking? But if I pay $2,000 for a Samsung phone and it has bugs, I'm going to call my carrier and say, fix it.
Even though the carrier can't fix it.
Well, yeah, that's true. What am I going to do, call Samsung, though?
That's right. You know, see, and that's where I'm going with this is, if you want a phone or a device that doesn't have at least one or two bugs in it, don't buy the latest. You know, wait a few months before you buy the latest greatest. You know, then at that point, hopefully, all the bugs that the early adopters found in it are gone. So, because I think like a lot of the updates that they've made to the Pixel 6 Pro since it came out have fixed a lot of the bugs already. And it's been out, what, since November, I think?
Yeah, and I bought the Note 10 Plus, like, you know, within a couple of days of its release.
Right.
And well, I didn't have any real issues with bugs on it, though.
Right. You see,
What was it that it came with? Android 10?
Yeah.
Like, Android 10 was a new operating system or anything.
It was, yeah. Well, yeah, it wasn't. It was several months old when it came out, at least on the Pixels, so.
Yeah. So it had been around for a while, so it ended up not being a problem. But it very well, you know, very easily could have been.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I think you're going to notice a lot of things you're probably going to notice on buying like the latest greatest is you're also going to find manufacturing issues that 2 months later you won't find.
Yeah. And I would love to get the 22 Ultra as soon as it came out, but you know, it's going to be the top end of the top end, so it's going to be a $2,000 freaking phone.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's the only one that's, you know, going to be note-like. It's the only one that's going to have the S Pen with it.
I need a, well, and most of these have come from leaks. So the official announcement, I think, unpacks next week, I think.
Probably. Because it's supposed to release in, what, May?
It's because it uses a volume mount. So you have, and Docker, it uses containers. So in the Docker container, it's a volume mount, and you have it already all set up on your system that it's that WordPress directory, and under there is your WP contents and everything from there. There's no symlinks involved. I didn't even realize that, and that took like hours to figure that out, like what was going on. As to why it just did weird things and it wasn't working right. Although it appeared to be working fine, but it wasn't. And it took a while to figure that out. And I couldn't go in and fix that problem. Like, you can switch it from using file and dir constants to script location, I think it is. Is the command. Or is the option to use in place of that? But that would require like actually going into plugins that we don't control and doing all that. So I did the ugliest thing that finally worked. Like the only thing I can think of that worked. This is so freaking ugly. It's hideous and I hate it. Is that once I got to the point of almost everything configured and ready to go, and before I restarted Apache, and before I finished the rest of what needed to be done for the Cypress testing, I moved the project directory. So your repo gets mounted at home circle CI project. I moved that project directory into the WordPress directory under and put it under WP contents, which was it's so hideous. It bugs me having to do that, because like you shouldn't. It's terrible, because then when I'm finished, I kind of got to move it back out of there if I want to do anything else, and that directory has to exist, like home circle CI project doesn't have to have what you need in it. It just has to exist, because every step under Circle CI kind of starts you in a shell under Home Circle CI project, and if the directory doesn't exist, it's not gonna work. It's gonna throw problems. So I had to move that directory out of there and then create a symlink to its new location under Home Circle CI project, which of course doesn't cause a problem then, so that I can get the artifacts out of there to put back into, so we could look at the results of the testing. And so once I got that all in place and all the Apache configuration stuff going on and all that stuff figured out, which took until I think it was yesterday, we got to that point. This morning when I ran it, I was getting all my tests coming back successfully, except for like four. And that was a big difference in running it locally. I also forgot to mention the whole ordeal of an Okta account that didn't require multi-factor authentication. That took a day to get. Anyway, then today, like trying to figure out why some of these tests are failing and why, like when I run this locally, instead of like there's 27 tests, and like 21 of them or something, like 20 of them or something were succeeding in Cypress, in Circle CI. It used to be none of them were succeeding. Now it's like 20 of them are succeeding. Locally, I have like 7 or 8 succeed and the rest fail. And I'm trying to figure this out. And lo and behold, like all this time we're digging around trying to figure out why this is happening, because we think it's the same problem that's happening in Circle CI. And to, you know, make a long story short, it all boiled down to, and it took all day to figure this out, the version of WordPress I was using was, I was using 4.6.1 locally, and the guy that originally set all this stuff up was using 5.7.1. Yeah, 5.7.1. I was using 5.6.1. He was using 5.7.1. In Circle CI, I was using 5.7.1. And 5.7.1, whatever changes were made between 5.6.1 and 5.7.1, like totally broke half of our plugins. And it was a weird thing because it was functioning just fine for about everything I was doing testing locally, but it wasn't loading in our complete set of customized blocks for the Gutenberg editor. And I didn't really notice it because I'm spending all my time on infrastructure and just making sure, like, hey, I can get in and it pops up and I see the editor there. I didn't really notice that it was not the same interface and a lot of the customized fields were missing, because I wasn't really doing much in it functionality-wise. So hopefully now tomorrow I can continue on and just get the last bit of those tests fixed, figured out, and be done with it and be so happy. But fun stuff. I really enjoy it, even though it can be a little frustrating. Right, Joel?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Yep. We gotta get the show wrapping up, don't we?
Oh, you know what I get to test, man?
What?
Your favorite?
No.
A new version of ServiceNow.
You know what? I don't want to hear about it. You know what? Here's the thing. Here's another thing, right? Like, speaking of ServiceNow, I was trying to do the right thing. I had asked around about getting, how can I get a test account that doesn't require multi-factor authentication, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to open a ticket to our identity management team. And they use ServiceNow. Like half the company uses ServiceNow. We use Jira. Half the company uses ServiceNow. And I went into ServiceNow. And they, every time I go in there, they have changed it and they keep trying to simplify it. and they have like a bunch of tasks that you can do. Like, oh, you need to give an, you know, you need a new account, you need to disable account, you need to change something about an account, you need to do this, you need to do that. They have all these options that you can pick from, but you can't just open a ticket when none of those options work for you. And I've spent like a half an hour digging through ServiceNow what was available to me. I couldn't figure out a damn thing. I couldn't find a damn thing that I wanted to do, and it kept taking me in circles, and I just, Joel, it just pissed me off. I hate ServiceNow. Hate it.
Yeah, well, we're changing that in some of the practices that we use. Like, we're making it such that we used to have this cloud advisory board that would have to approve all changes for our clients. That's lessening a little bit, so it's a little bit more in the team's control than it is everybody else who doesn't know our product like we do. So, but
you know what the best thing to do for ServiceNow? Disconnect it and get something better.
I'm not disagreeing, but yeah, I spent part of my control. Day watching. Yeah, right. Part of my day I spent watching some videos on the version, and we got meetings next week, so we're going to do some UAT on it. So
that's cool.
But we'll see. I think the specific area that we're looking at is problem management. So that's the area they needed testers for. So me and my old buddy from the call, you know, the two guys that worked for the same school for years are going to be looking at it. So
oh, that's cool. We got to wrap this up, man. Holy crap. It is late.
Yes, we do. Yep.
Update your systems. All right. I'm going to play this out.
Yes, sir.
Have a good week, and you know, see you in February. Here are your promos. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot. I muted this system. I was like, uh-oh. Did an update cause the audio to flake out? No. So let's unmute it. See. Here we go.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
Boo. Yeah. Mm-mm.
Check out that TripAdvisor link I put for that restaurant on Kelly's, and then they have a picture of the fish in there. I think that's the walleye. It's pretty yummy.
Where's the fish? Wait, is that the fish in the upper right-hand corner?
Yeah,
on top of the fries? Okay.
Yeah, that's the fish. Some of the fish they have. They do both walleye and perch that way.
Well, that's cool.
Yep, they got that's in their baskets, and that's $16.99 with fries and coleslaw.
Nice.
So the two fish, they have three fish, but the ones probably doesn't come from the lake, because that's cod. That doesn't come from there. But walleye and perch definitely come from the lake. Then they have chicken tender and chicken drumsticks in the baskets. They got sandwiches and barbecue too.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a neat little place. Is it the best food I ever ate? Nope, but it's tasty and it's got a good view.
Oh, I got stopped recording. Say goodnight, Joel.
Goodnight, Joel.
Option in there. It gives you the like an IP address with a port, your IP address with a port to connect to, and I connected that way. That's why I had that problem. Now it makes perfect sense. Good job, Joel. I feel like a fool, but good job.
Well, happy it's working. I mean, this is.
It's really sweet, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Now I wonder if you disconnect, will it stay in TCP/IP mode permanently until you turn off USB
debugging?
According
to what I'm reading here, probably when you restart the phone, it'll switch back. But to switch back to USB mode, you need to reconnect it over USB and type ADB space USB.
Right, I saw that. So at this point, I won't need to do that anymore. I just need to keep it on. Unless I restart the phone, it'll probably stay this way, huh?
Yeah.
That's not too bad. That's fun. It's fun. Look at that.
Mm-hmm. So now...
Try out some simple stuff. I'm switching screens on the home screen. Now, I have had problems in the past with the lock screen.
Okay.
Like, see, I just locked my phone, and then I'm clicking here, and it is not bringing up anything. So if I hit the button on my phone, then I can unlock it using the computer. But while it's, like, screen locked and black, I can't do anything.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Let's see what happens when I close the screen, lock the screen on here. Black.
I wonder if you probably could send texts that way on your phone, I think.
Well, yeah. Why wouldn't you be able to? You can control your phone completely. It's just controlling the screen of your phone from here, except for when the screen is shut down. Like, normally I'd be able to double tap on my screen and turn it on, or press the button and turn it on, but I can't do that from the computer.
Good.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. I want to make sure. I just did it.
Oh, you unlocked it while the screen was black?
Yeah, from the computer only. I shut it off. And it took a little, like, wiggling with the mouse and stuff over it for a little bit, and then it finally got me to my unlock thing, and I did the pattern, and it unlocked the phone.
It's not doing anything for me.
Weird. I had to, like, let me try it again.
A Pixel, what, 6 or 5?
Yeah. Like, if I tap on it, I, like, have to hold down and drag my... Wait a minute. Oh, right-click on it. Interesting. If I right-click on it, it does it.
Okay, I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah, right-click on it, and then the right-click unlocked it. That's all I had to do was right-click on it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Look at that. How about that?
So now you just have that hooked up on when it's sitting at your desk, and then you can just use your computer to do it.
Right.
Let me send a text to my wife.
Well, plus, you know, if I leave my phone in another room accidentally, I still have control.
Won't be able to take all, but you at least can text.
Yeah.
I'll have to try a Dex from, like, you know, on my phone in another room. What I need to do is I need to just take my Surface Pro downstairs and just leave it down there. That way, if I never need a computer and I'm down there and the iPad's not enough, like if I want to look at my phone or something, but I don't mess with that.
Oh, but. This is cool. But I think my next I'm still working on how I'm going to do my USB IP Raspberry Pi Zero project.
Eric?
So I can walk into other rooms wearing this headset and still have it connected to the computer out here.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a way that I can actually do that with an Android phone, too, over the wireless network, but I'd rather do it with the Pi.
Right. See, that has me debating. Well, I have a friend locally here. We used to know her. She used to bowl or come along when her boyfriend was bowling. When we were bowling over at Wayne Webb's, she posted a picture. I guess somebody hit her car in her driveway. And I'm like, well, that sucks.
While she was bowling?
No, she was at home. It was overnight. She came out to go to work in the morning, and the passenger door in her car had a big dent in it, like a huge dent.
That sucks.
Yeah. So that has me thinking more and more of making sure that I get a camera on the driveway on my brand new vehicle.
Yeah, Ring floodlight camera. That's what I have.
Yep. Or I think they're still working on it, but Google has the Nest camera, but there's like a third-party company that is building solar panels for the cameras. It has a battery in it already, and the battery, from what I've read about the camera, the battery will last 2 months. But if I get the solar panel on it, I don't ever have to worry about charging it. And really all I have to do is charge it first inside, hook up the wires and the panel and all that, and just go screw it into the side of the house, and I don't have to connect any wires inside. So I'm really thinking about that. Not to mention the fact that Nest cameras should be available to look at from my Google Hub downstairs.
What, you don't want to hook it up to, you know, house power?
Well, I don't want to have to run electrical out there, yeah.
Oh.
So, yes, I'm lazy. So what? But no, I mean, it's also, you know, it's just easier location. You know, well, basically, you don't have to worry about
Don't you have a light on your driveway anyway?
I do.
It's a flashlight.
There's your power right there.
It's a flashlight.
If you get the floodlight one, then you just replace the light.
Yeah. I got coach lights on either side of the driveway, so if I just replace one fixture, that's not going to work. Not to mention the fact the wife would throw a shit fit. But yeah. But, yeah, definitely.
Well, the power's there. I mean, all you have to do is split a line off of it.
Right. Right. But, yeah, I don't... The wireless one will work. It'll do what I want to do. as long as it's connecting to Wi-Fi, it's fine. You know, so... Solar panel, it's not unobtrusive. But the only thing I would say about it is that... I've seen some cameras, and this is why I'm still kind of looking, is because the Nest camera is kind of pricey. But I've seen some of them where they put the panel, they literally build the panel into the camera's mount. So basically, it's just one thing you screw into the thing. And the way these panels are for the Nest cameras is they're like a separate thing, and each the camera and the panel has its own mount. The good thing is I could probably, if I wanted to, I can mount the panel, like, up high. You know, like, I don't know if I'd want to put it on the roof necessarily, but I can even put, make it a little bit less obtrusive. But the downside is I'd have a cable going to the panel. So, we'll see. I don't know. I want to get, it's too cold to do that shit right now. You know, with it being 0 degrees or below. Well, we haven't had below. Up in Michigan, I have my manager works up in Michigan, and that's where his house is, and it was -4. I'm like, that's cold. But, yeah, I do want to do that, and if I get a couple of them, like really I could do all the areas I want to do with probably two. So I already got the one built into the doorbell. All right. That covers the front door. And then I already got an alarm system that would trigger if the windows in front got broken in. But camera wise, the driveway is really the only place I'd want to have covered out front. Then in the back, kind of right above my air conditioner, if I mounted the camera just so that I could cover the screen room entry as well as the pit boss, then I'd be good. That would cover all the areas I really care about. And I don't want to put no cameras in the house, inside. Especially cloud-connected cameras like that.
You don't want the cloud-connected cameras in your bedroom?
No, that's not a good idea. What phone do you actually have now, Dan? I forget which one you got.
I have the Pixel 4a.
Oh, the 4a. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you got the 5 for some reason, but okay.
No. I got the 4a like right before they released the 5, I think it was, and it was
okay.
Yeah, you know, dirt cheap. A significant price difference than the 5.
Right.
Yes. So.
Didn't they release them at almost the same time, the 4A and the 5?
Yeah.
I do believe, but you know what? I don't know. There was the 4A, and then there was the 4A with, or the 4 with 5G. And like the 5G one was a lot more expensive than the 4A.
I don't
think the 5 was out when I got when I got the 4A, I think it was like right about to be released. I could be wrong though. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things. And the worst part is I really need to check. It's one of those things where I don't. Well, I might try calling Verizon up first, but none of my phones have it yet. Well, my son's does, but he doesn't need it. But Verizon has activated the C-band 5G, and it is active in my area. So. I might consider that. The one thing I really wish.
You're just looking for an excuse to buy that 22, aren't you?
I think the Pixel 6 Pro supports it too, if I remember right. But
yeah, but you're not going to get the Pixel. You're going to go for the 22.
We'll see. I don't know that the European release on the 22 looks to be the 25th of February. That doesn't necessarily
mean they're
going to
have the faster processor overseas. The Zenios. Well, see,
that makes me wonder. Exynos.
Thank you.
Right. That's the actual Samsung version of the processor. The American version usually gets a Qualcomm chip.
Right, and the Qualcomm this time surprisingly is going to be slower.
Well, isn't that always?
No.
Oh.
No.
And then the Pixel 6 Pro has the Google Tensor Core chip. That's its CPU. So, we'll see. I've got a month or two before I can make a decision on that, because I don't have enough money saved up to pay the phone off yet. But... the website
might let you switch without having it paid off. Just roll over the debt.
I don't think I can. I can check. Well, usually...
trade in the old phone. That'll cover that.
Well, as I say, yeah. I don't think I can do that, though, with the way Verizon's plans are. Well, I usually do trade in the phone. That's what I did last time, so I don't. I'm trying to remember if I had to see him. Pixel 2 is what I had then, because I don't have the Pixel 2. But I
don't trade in my phones. Yeah. I give them to the kids.
Yeah, well, my kid already has a better phone than I do, so I don't want to trade anything to him. mostly because he broke his. Fortunately, his was paid off, but when he broke it. So it ended up costing me about the same to set up the new one as it would have to have the insurance cover the old one. But he had the 10E. No, not the E.
The cheapo 10?
No, he didn't have the cheapo 10. He had the S10 5G, and that actually kind of made things a pain in the ass trying to find a freaking case for it, because the S10 5G was bigger than the plain old S10. So, and we probably didn't need to have the 5G version either, because it was before the ultra wideband stuff. So both his and my phone really only supports the millimeter wave band, and I never used it. So, the only bad thing is the Verizon's unlimited plans. They don't have a shared plan with as much bandwidth or as much of a cap as our old plan has. Our current plan has 16 gig that we share, and we never go over it. So to go with the unlimited plans, right now it's going to be 50. Because the one kind of nice thing about the unlimited plan is I can go with what the Verizon calls the Play More plan, and we can give my wife the lower plan, since she hardly uses it away from the house. I might consider doing Luke that one too, because he uses it away from the house, but a lot of times he'll hook onto the Wi-Fi of wherever you're at. So.
Yeah, I don't know what bands I really get anymore. Whenever I look at my phone, it just tells me Wi-Fi 6.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, mine supports that too, as does my laptop, my iPad does. Of course, you have to have it at home first, and I do.
Yep, same here.
But, I don't know if I mentioned that first week of, or weekend of April, I think my birthday's on a Monday this year. A Sunday or a Monday, I can't remember which, I'd have to look. My birthday's the 4th. But right around that time, the family and I were going to go glamping, if you want to call it glamping. I don't think it's that glamorous, though. We rented a cabin up at Kelly's Island. The cabin has...
Is there a 75-inch TV?
No.
Then you're not glamping.
Yeah, that's why I figured. There is a microwave and a mini fridge, though, in the cabin. No full kitchen. It doesn't have a full kitchen, so I'd have to cook outside, and that's okay. I'm fine with that. The only kind of tent-like thing I'll have to take is I got one of them canopies where basically you just have two people grab each side of the thing, and it expands and goes up really quickly. That I'll probably put over the picnic table. The nice thing is that one doesn't have some of the canopies you can put over picnic tables have a center pole. This one doesn't have that. That's it. I'll put that over there, and I'll have I don't know what I'm going to have. I have a camp stove, that can take propane, the little propane cylinders. But I kind of want to get a Blackstone in the portable one. They're about $99 to $89-ish, depending on when you find them.
Just use Uber Eats.
On the island, you can't do that. There's no chains there. There's no... I don't think you could do... You know what? That's interesting. I wonder if you could now. Last time when I was on the island, I had barely any cell reception at all, and it would drift roam onto the Canadian cells. because it's in the middle of Lake Erie. So you have to take a ferry to get there.
What are you looking at for the cost, and how long are you staying there?
I'm going to check in Friday. I took Friday off too. And we'll check out Monday morning, I think. So like it's $75 a night, I think. And it's got, and the cabin's got like a room for the beds, and they are, bunks, I think. What we may do is we may take a cot just in case, because I'm not convinced that my son can still climb it in the top bunk, because there's no way his mom and dad are. and the beds are kind of in one room, then the other room's kind of like a family room there. So it's got a little table in there. It's got the microwave and the fridge in there, and basically just a big storage space to like where you can put your coolers and stuff. And it's got a nice lot, and it's got air conditioning and heat, which April and Lake Erie, I could need both. It depends. Probably nothing at all, because we may need jackets when we're up there too, because it just depends. I've been up there when it's like 80 or 90 degrees in Columbus, and it's only 50 or 60 on the island. So, and I'm sure we'll eat out when we're on the island too, just because they got a lot of cool restaurants. There's one on the west side of the island, where you can go and, sit, and they got the windows set up such that you can sit there and watch the sunset on Lake Erie. They happen to also have walleye that you can order as part of your meal, and that's what I got the last time I was there. You ever had walleye, Dan?
I have what, walleye?
Yeah, walleye fish, yeah.
No, I've never had. Have you?
Oh, yeah. It's good. It's delicious. Yeah, it's really good.
What does it like taste like? Like what fish would you say it tastes close to? Trout.
Fish. Yeah, fish. Tastes close to fish.
Probably not that much different than trout. Okay. You know, I would think, it's a white kind of meat. They the way I had it there was it was fried. I think it was either. I don't know if it was batter dipped or dipped in crumbs. I can't remember because it was 2 years ago, but it was covered in something and fried. So deep fried, of course, but it's delicious. And it's now to the point now. When I was a kid, the idea of eating any fish that you caught on Lake Erie was not a good idea.
Heavy metals?
It doesn't have that problem anymore.
Well, that's good.
It's recovered, so you can eat fish. In fact, they do have commercial fishing off of that. In fact, that's where they get this. It's a shit-in caught off Lake Erie from one of the fisheries there. The other thing, too, that they'd have there, I've never seen one in person, but Lake Erie had a real problem with lampreys.
Okay.
And basically, I think they got carried in because it'll have ocean vessels because it comes up through the St. Lawrence and through Ontario and into Lake Erie. And I think they have ocean-going ships that'll travel all the Great Lakes to get to, like, Michigan or something like that, depending on what they need. And so the ocean-carrying vessels brought these things in, and essentially they are a fish. But they're like a parasite fish. So what they'll do is they'll attach on the side of other fish and eat them from the inside out.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if they have them there anymore. So I know Lake Erie has walleye. They have perch. I wonder if they probably have muskies as well. And the last time we were there, we didn't get any fish. We caught more in when we fished out of Burr Oak than we did Lake Erie. Lake Erie is probably rough to fish just because the only thing I can fish off of is the island. You know, they don't have a dock per se. They have I think it's like a wave break that goes out into the lake. So there's like a little cove on the campground side so this kind of protects the waves coming in to tear up the campground, you know. But it's all solid and connected to the lake bottom, so it's not like you can fish from it very well without catching your line in the rocks and stuff. So, but like, we've gone to Hargis Lake, which is just south of here, and fished off of there and caught various fish. I think we caught like some bluegill and something. I'm trying to remember what the one my son caught. He of course beat me, caught the bigger fish, but I'll bring my knife just in case we catch some, and then we'll do it in the fry pan.
Are you gonna fry the knife in the fry pan?
No, the fish.
Gotta clean the fish somehow.
Yep. They used to have, I don't know if they have it anymore. At one point, they used to have an area where you can go and clean it. So it was kind of nice because it had they had trash cans and stuff where you could just dump the fish. But I think they still have that. But you have to take your fish guts and put them in the camp dumpsters instead of just leaving them there, you know.
That lovely smell of rotting fish guts.
Right. That campground never had too much of a problem with raccoons either, which I've been to campgrounds where, like, 1 year we camped at a private campground down by Kings Island, and my brother and them came up. We all slept in tents. And they gave us the campsite right across from the camp dumpsters. And we're sitting around a campfire. I said, Tim, look over there. I sat there from my campfire, looked across the road to where the dumpsters were, and I watched one raccoon go to the top of the dumpster, hold the lid of the dumpster up, and then another raccoon climb in. They're smart things, man. But the whole thing is they would do that shit all fucking night. So you'd hear, wham! Scrap, 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 scrabble. And every time that wham happened was when one of them lifted it up and let the other one in. I think they even lifted it up to let them out, too.
That's nice of them.
But yeah, raccoons are smart. I know Ingrid's smart, stupid trash pandas.
Before we go, just a little update. Last week I had boasted and ballyhooed and enjoyed the fact that I had figured out getting no the dryer is old news now. We're talking about getting the WordPress install, the VIP WordPress install working in Circle CI and Cypress, and I was a little premature in my excitement. what was interesting about this is while it seemed to work, all the tests were failing, and I mean, long story short, come to find out, when you go to set up WordPress, you have to have, like, you got to be careful of what things you have enabled in Apache and what may not be enabled, and how you need to do rewrite rules and everything in Apache, which didn't even dawn on me that I had to implement that stuff, because it just kind of worked when we did it with Vagrant VVV. All we had to do, varying vagrants, whatever it was, all we had to do was just like run this, and I guess it had all these implemented and I didn't even notice it, but it took a long time, like a couple of days of tweaking it and testing things out. And the testing process, probably one of the things like I love and don't love about Circle CI is it has this SSH capability where you can rerun a job with SSH enabled, and then you can connect into it with SSH. And so you're in that instance that Circle CI spins up. Now, I don't recall ever having anything like that on Jenkins, where you can connect in via SSH to that session that's actually running. So what ends up happening is your thing, it runs in Circle CI and then it finishes, but it stays open so long as you are connected via SSH, and it will stay alive for 10 minutes after it's spun up without any connection over SSH. But after 10 minutes it's gonna die. My only complaint about that service is that I wish you can start the initial run with SSH enabled, and I don't see a way that you can add that into the config file for your job to do that, because what is kind of annoying is if I let our job run to completion, it's gonna take like 7 to 10 minutes. So having to wait 7 to 10 minutes for the job to complete, and I do want the job to go to completion most of the time because I want to see the results of the tests, whether they succeed or not. And I kind of do have to let it go through most of the way through completion, because it isn't until it starts to run the test that everything is set up and configured in the WordPress side of things. Now I can stop it right away and then manually do that, but it kind of defeats the purpose. So that being said, it was interesting, because I had to go through a lot of hoops with SED to be able to insert the configurations into apache.conf and update like HT access rules and enable plugin modules and stuff like that. So while it was challenging, it took a while to figure out that that's what I needed to do, because we were getting when I looked in the logs of Apache, which again Circle CI gave us the capability of doing that through SSH, I could see that I was getting 404s on certain paths. Oh, and another thing that really, really like screwed me over right from the start is PHP dir and file constants do not respect symlinks. They substitute in there the absolute path in the symlink. So what I mean by that is, say you have a directory, like a directory A and then a subdirectory B and a subdirectory under B, C, right? And then you have another directory, E, F, G. And say you want to symlink inside of directory C, X symlinks to G over in the other directory. What ends up happening then is that PHP, if you require or use the file or directory constant, it adds the absolute path in there. So instead of being like A, B, C, G, which X is symlinked to G, it becomes A, B, C, E, F, G. And it totally screws up what it's trying to find, because obviously what you're trying to get to is not going to be there, because it adds that absolute path in there. And that was a deal breaker, like almost a deal breaker for this, because we had to take the directory, which is checked in to GitHub, the WP contents directory, contents of WP content is our GitHub directory. That's how VIP works. And you set it up like locally under Vagrant. Why this wasn't a problem is because it uses a volume mount. So you have, and Docker can, well, it uses containers. So in the Docker container, it's a volume mount, and you have it already all set up on your system that it's that WordPress directory, and under there is your WP contents and everything from there. There's no symlinks involved. I didn't even realize that, and that took like hours to figure that out, like what was going on as to why it just did weird things and it wasn't working right. Although it appeared to be working fine, but it wasn't. It took a while to figure that out. And I couldn't go in and fix that problem. Like, you can switch it from using file and dir constants to scripts location, I think it is the command. Or is the option to use in place of that? But that would require like actually going into plugins that we don't control and doing all that. So I did the ugliest thing that finally worked. Like, the only thing I can think of that worked, this is so freaking ugly, it's hideous and I hate it, is that once I got to the point of almost everything configured and ready to go, and before I restarted Apache, and before I finished the rest of what needed to be done for the Cypress testing, I moved the project directory. So your repo gets mounted at home circle CI project. I moved that project directory into the WordPress directory under and put it under WP contents, which was it's so hideous. It bugs me having to do that, because like, you shouldn't, it's terrible, because then when I'm finished, I kind of got to move it back out of there if I want to do anything else, and that directory has to exist. Like, home circle CI project doesn't have to have what you need in it. It just has to exist, because every step under Circle CI kind of starts you in a shell under home Circle CI project. And if the directory doesn't exist, it's not going to work. It's going to throw problems. So I had to move that directory out of there and then create a symlink to its new location under home Circle CI project, which of course doesn't cause a problem then, so that I can get the artifacts out of there to put back into, so we could look at the results of the testing. And so once I got that all in place and all the Apache configuration stuff going on and all that stuff figured out, which took until I think it was yesterday, we got to that point. This morning when I ran it, I was getting all my tests coming back successfully, except for like four, and that was a big difference in running it locally. I also forgot to mention the whole ordeal of an Okta account that didn't require multi-factor authentication. That took a day to get. Anyway, then today, like, trying to figure out why some of these tests are failing and why, like, when I run this locally, instead of, like, there's 27 tests and, like, 21 of them or something, like, 20 of them or something were succeeding in Cypress, in Circle CI. It used to be none of them were succeeding. Now it's, like, 20 of them are succeeding. Locally, I have, like, 7 or 8 succeed and the rest fail, and I'm trying to figure this out, and lo and behold, like, all this time we're digging around trying to figure out why this is happening, because we think it's the same problem that's happening in Circle CI. And to, you know, make a long story short, it all boiled down to, and it took all day to figure this out, the version of WordPress I was using was I was using 4.6.1 locally, and the guy that's originally set all this stuff up was using 5.7.1. I was using 5.6.1. He was using 5.7.1. In Circle CI, I was using 5.7.1. And 571, whatever changes were made between 561 and 571, like, totally broke half of our plugins. And it was a weird thing because it was functioning just fine for about everything I was doing testing locally, but it wasn't loading in our complete set of customized blocks for the Gutenberg editor. And I didn't really notice it because I'm spending all my time on infrastructure and just making sure, like, hey, I can get in and it pops up and I see the editor there. I didn't really notice that it was not the same interface and a lot of the customized fields were missing because I wasn't really doing much in it functionality-wise. So hopefully now tomorrow I can continue on and just get the last bit of those tests fixed, figured out, and be done with it and be so happy. But fun stuff. I really enjoy it, even though it can be a little frustrating. Right, Joel?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Yep. We gotta get the show wrapping up, don't we?
Oh, you know what I get to test, man?
What?
Your favorite?
No.
A new version of ServiceNow.
You know what? I don't want to hear about it. You know what? Here's the thing. Here's another thing, right? Like, speaking of ServiceNow, I was trying to do the right thing. I had asked around about getting, how can I get a test account that doesn't require multi-factor authentication, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to open a ticket to our identity management team. And they use ServiceNow. Like, half the company uses ServiceNow. We use Jira. Half the company uses ServiceNow. And I went into ServiceNow. And they, every time I go in there, they have changed it. And they keep trying to simplify it. And they have, like, a bunch of tasks that you can do. Like, oh, you need to give, you need a new account. You need to disable account. You need to change something about an account. You need to do this. You need to do that. They have all these options that you can pick from. But you can't just open a ticket when none of those options work for you. And I've spent like a half an hour digging through ServiceNow, what was available to me. I couldn't figure out a damn thing. I couldn't find a damn thing that I wanted to do. And it kept taking me in circles. And it just pissed me off. I hate ServiceNow. Hate it.
Yeah, well, we're changing that in some of the practices that we use. Like, we're making it such that we used to have this cloud advisory board that would have to approve all changes for our clients. That's lessening a little bit, so it's a little bit more in the team's control than it is everybody else who doesn't know our product like we do. So, but
you know what the best thing to do for ServiceNow? Disconnect it and get something better.
I'm not disagreeing, but yeah, I spent part of my day watching. Yeah, right. Part of my day I spent watching some videos on the version, and we got meetings next week, so we're going to do some UAT on it. So
that's cool.
But we'll see. I think the specific area that we're looking at is problem management. So that's the area they needed testers for. So me and my old buddy from the college, the two guys that worked for the same school for years are going to be looking at it. So
oh, that's cool. We got to wrap this up, man. Holy crap. It is late.
Yes, we do. Yep.
Update your systems. All right, I'm going to play
this out. Yes, sir.
Have a good week, and I'll see you in February. Here are your promos. Oh, I forgot. I muted. Oop. Needed this system. I was like, uh-oh. Did an update cause the audio to flake out? No. Let's unmute it. See? Here we go.
I am short.
Oh my god.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Boo.
Yeah.
Check out that TripAdvisor link I put for that restaurant on Kelly's, and then they have a picture of the fish in there. I think that's the walleye. It's pretty yummy.
Where's the fish? Wait, is that the fish in the upper right-hand corner?
Yeah,
on top of the fries?
That.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the fish. Some of the fish they have. They do both walleye and perch that way.
Well, that's cool.
Yep, they got that's in their baskets, and that's $16.99 with fries and coleslaw.
Nice.
So the two fish, they actually have three fish, but the ones probably doesn't come from the lake, because that's cod that doesn't come from there. But walleye and perch definitely come from the lake. And then they have chicken tender and chicken drumsticks in the baskets. They got sandwiches and barbecue too.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a neat little place. Is it the best food I ever ate? Nope, but it's tasty and it's got a good view.
Oh, I got stopped recording. Say goodnight, Joel.
Goodnight, Joel. Probably not bloody likely to happen here. Plus, all my plumbing is PEX, so I still do it. It's just a good idea.
All your plumbing is what?
PEX. P-E-X.
What's that?
It's a flexible plumbing that's instead of having like to run from the wall where all the like main water stuff comes in,
right,
to a bathroom. There's no L, but like from where it branches off the T to where it hooks up to like the sink, there's no elbows or anything other than just standard PEX connectors, you know, and you know there's no glue or anything to dry out. It's ran very similarly to network cabling in that it's all home run.
I don't put out as regularly.
Haha.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, so I mean it's a little bit more modern, more reliable. It's not like CPVC or PVC or, God forbid, galvanized. You know, which... nowadays, I don't think you want... If you had galvanized in a house, I would look at removing it. Have me some burgers for dinner tonight.
Rusty Burgers?
No, Wahlburgers.
We don't have any Wahlburgers around here. How many? Like how?
Well,
how,
I don't either.
Oh, you don't? Well, how did
no,
you have?
They sell the patties at my grocery store.
Oh.
So I bought the patties and made them at home on my, not on my Pit Boss because it's too effing cold for that. On my, I got that Griddler thing I got last year when I lived in the apartment. That's what I used to cook them on. And I added a little bit of liquid smoke to it and Weber's Flavor Bomb, or either Flavor Bomb or Burger Bomb. I think it's Flavor Bomb. I got that spice at Sam's Club. It air fried Frenchie fries.
Dun dun dun. What's your air fryer?
I don't even remember anymore. I got like my microwave that I got up here, which is the microwave we used at the apartment. I wasn't gonna throw it away. It's still perfectly good. It was just a year old, so I just put it in my office, and that's why I use like I got a couple of bags of Act Two popcorn up here, and when I'm on a long call or something and I want a snack, I'll pop some popcorn or actually
wait, 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 wait. The microwave's in your office or the air fryer's in your office?
Well, my microwave that I bought last year that we used at the house is also an air fryer. So it does both. But I got the regular air fryer that it didn't. Well, I still used it at the apartment because a lot of times I would air fry something in the microwave and air fry something in the air fryer.
I don't get the whole air fryer microwave combo. How does that work? What's up, Joe?
It's just got a, like, I think it's got an element in the top of the microwave, and then it just blows air.
Hey, Joe. But can you put metal in it?
Yep.
But not when you're microwaving.
Yeah, when you're in airframe mode, you can do that.
And it's not a microwave.
Sounds a little dangerous.
It's both. I can do either. I've air fried when I was at the apartment. I would air fry like those bubbly pizza things. You know, just throw some sauce and cheese on it and make a little pizza.
Did you ever air fry something and then microwave it right away?
No.
Or the opposite? Microwave something and then air fry it?
I've microwaved like meat, like, you know, to defrost it, you know, and then air fried it. But I don't air fry like straight up. Like, I know some people who air fry steaks, and I'm like, that sounds a little messy. But when I get new microwaves to go over the stove, which I'm not gonna anytime soon because there's no reason to, but when I'm ready to swap microwaves, I'm gonna make sure I get an air fry mode, because it's essentially just a convection oven at that point, really.
I have a recipe for air fried orange chicken that I want to try out.
Ooh. That sounds good, and that sounds like Dan's getting electrocuted.
I don't think that's me.
No, it's not me, because I'm hearing it too.
I'm hearing it.
Pat?
I'm not hearing it now.
Not me. I don't have any cables.
I'm wireless.
It's got to be one of your... Dan, you've got three machines. How can you say it's not you?
Well, I'm not sure which one it is, but I heard it. I'll keep an ear out for it.
All right. I do got some technical stuff today. I tried a new version of Linux on my PowerBook G4.
Well, that's good, because we didn't even start the show yet, so...
Yeah.
Let's get it rolling. Let's get it going on!